And everyone is paying attention to Kobe Bryant.
They start with Shaq. He gives it to Walton. Here comes Kobe. Less than five from way outside. Got it! Oh, man!
With 2.1.
Looking to it. Kobe Bryant has it. Whatever that it is, pal, he has it. He has the ability to make big shots.
Azubuike kept it alive, but Kobe with the rebound. Spurs cannot buy a triple. Kobe wheeling. What a play to Turi off. And the foul.
Patty watching Kobe. Stooping, driving, and putting it in. How in the world did he do that?
He passed to himself off the backboard. That was a wide.
How are you doing?
I'm great.
I like the everybody's excited to see it.
That's got to be best part.
Well, you're beloved.
How you doing? What's going on? Everything all right?
Everything's yep. good, man.
Enjoying retirement? Is it fun?
I'm enjoying retirement.
I mean, I know you're doing a lot of other things, but... Yeah,
but it's fun.
Gotcha.
I'll get a chance to watch a game from
Charlie. Yeah, you're coaching. Yeah.
I am coaching. So
how many games in a row would the Lakers have to lose for you to unretire, for you to come back to the team?
I mean, if we got to 20, you would think about it, right?
You will think about it, huh?
You got to dribble Bryant, change of direction by Bryant. Slam dunk. There will be no charge because the man's in that new painted imaginary circle.
I think that's what the fans came to see. And you talk about elevation. Chick, he went up to the rafters before he decided to put somebody on a poster.
Good evening. It is Sunday, January 26th. I'm David Aldridge. I'm in D.C. We have Zach Harper from our staff is in L.A. this evening. Marcus Thompson is in Oakland. And Michael Lee is joining us from actually Lower Merion, Pennsylvania, just out a suburb, I guess you would call it, of Philadelphia. But Mike lives in Philly, so... I want to thank all of you all for coming on this evening. I'm not sure how this is going to go in terms of this podcast. Frankly, I'm not sure I'll be able to get through this podcast. The irony of that, of course, is that I would never pretend like Kobe Bryant and I were close friends. We weren't. I live on the East Coast. He did all of his work in Los Angeles, obviously, over 20 years. I was out there a lot, saw a lot of his games out there, covered him a lot. But, you know, there's geographic distance makes it kind of difficult sometimes to really have a relationship with someone. But having said that, I am beyond devastated, as everyone is today. Because there's just no way you can fathom this. I got a text this late this morning from Michael Eaves, a buddy of mine who works at ESPN, and I've known Michael for a long time. And we hadn't talked in a few weeks, and he just texted me out of the blue and said, "Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to catch up with you." And I didn't answer him because I said, "You know what? I'm just going to go. I want to go to the gym real quick. I'm going to go run for 45 minutes. And then I will come back and I will answer Michael Eaves' text." And of course, while I was at the gym, I saw this thing flash on the TV screen that just could not possibly be true. And the next few minutes for me were extremely difficult. And so I don't want to monopolize the microphone tonight. I will let anybody say whatever it is they want to say for as long as they want to say it.
Yeah, this is not good, man. I was at my daughter's first volleyball tournament, and she's playing in her first ever game. And I'm watching, and you know, my wife shows me some posts on Instagram, and I waved it off like, yeah, whatever. And like instantly after that, my phone started going off. So, like, I had to get up and leave my daughter's first game because I just couldn't. It was surreal. It was crazy. I had to see if it was true or not. You know, and it's like, and once I saw the Woj tweet, that's when I just kind of, man, it's insane. I just can't, like, this reminds me of 1996 when I was on campus at Clark Atlanta University and we got the news that Tupac died. But like, it felt like that, like just the hugest of gut punches of somebody who you didn't know him, but they were a part of your life. Like in such a major way. So yeah, this is as rough as it's been for me personally, like just dealing with a celebrity death. Like Michael Jackson comes to mind too. But man, like just the inclusion of his daughter in this is personally devastating, because I have one child and she's 12 and a half and she's an athlete, and I've watched Kobe and his daughter play out their life in the same fashion that I'm planning to play out the life of my daughter, albeit a different sport. So just the suddenness of how fast that could be taken away it definitely hits home for me.
I can't think of a celebrity death or famous person's death that hit me harder than this one. And I still am hoping that it's not true. I'm still hoping that somebody comes up and just says that, you know, oops, my bad mistake. It's not Kobe. Because it just doesn't seem real. It doesn't seem like it's possible that somebody who, you know, was such a tremendously talented, gifted, driven, you know, maniacal, just passionate athlete, you know, who would transition well to life after basketball, could be gone, you know, at a time when he just seemed to be content with who he was, content with who he was becoming, content with being a father, raising four girls, and really inspiring his oldest to take on a sport that meant the world to him, you know, that meant everything to him. You know, it's funny because I remember, you know, Kobe Bryant, when I first was introduced to Kobe Bryant, as just on TV, and he was this kid who had these sunglasses on, his bald shaved head, declaring that he was going to the NBA draft. And I remember I was in college and I was thinking, who's this young punk who thinks he's ready to play in the NBA? And it just drove me mad that this guy thought he was good enough to play in the NBA out of high school, a guard, no less. And it just infuriated me that he had this level of arrogance and confidence that he thought he could do this. Because we know that at that time, that just wasn't something that happened. You just don't leave. You go to college, you play 4 years, 3 years, maybe, if you're really good. And then you go to the NBA. And this guy said, I'm going straight to the league. And it was tough for me, too, because I was a Lakers fan. And when the Lakers drafted Kobe, I was furious because I didn't want him on my team because I already didn't like him. And so I spent, you know, probably 4 years, just like accepting him, you know, because Eddie Jones was my favorite player on the Lakers at the time. And Lakers were my favorite team. And so I love Nick Van Exel and Eddie Jones. And they traded Kobe Bryant. They traded Eddie Jones. And I was done with the Lakers. And I hated Kobe even more because he's the guy that pushed my guy out of L.A. And so I say that because I disliked him until I met him. And I met him my first year covering the NBA. And he didn't know me from diddly. I just happened to be in L.A. I sort of convinced my editors at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that I could get Kobe Bryant one-on-one. And so they let me go to L.A. And I don't even know how I pulled it off. But it was right around the time he had gone on this insane streak of games where he's getting 35 points a night. And he was just destroying teams because Shaq was hurt and he was really just carrying the Lakers. You know, as they were trying to go for four titles in a row. And he was just on this insane tear. And so I stood there and waited for him to finish his interview. And then I walked up to him and I just said, hey, Kobe, Michael Lee with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And I flew all the way out here to talk to you. And he commenced to give me 7 minutes to talk about the run that he had been on, and just what he what it meant for him to carry the Lakers during that stretch. And the whole time we were talking, I was like, man, I can't believe I hated this guy. and just from that moment on, I'm not professing to be, you know, friends with Kobe or having the greatest relationship with him. But I know that over the however many years that I covered him, that I thoroughly enjoyed talking to him and that he would always be willing to give me time whenever, you know, we crossed paths. You know, if I needed him for a couple extra minutes, I still remember Allison Bugley, who's now running the PR department there. One time I was in L.A. and I wanted to get Kobe when he was trying to make a run for MVP in 08. And Kobe didn't practice that day, but he was there. And Allison told me just to hang out in the gym, in the practice court, until all the other beat writers were gone. And then like about 10 minutes later, Kobe just popped his head out. We wound up talking for a little bit. And it's just stuff like that that I always remember because, you know, this is a guy at the top of his game. This is a guy who was, you know, he's in a debate, you know, it's been one of the greatest to ever play the game. But he was always accommodating. He was always willing to give me, you know, a little extra time. And that meant a lot for me, you know, being a young guy covering the league. So, you know, when he wound up retiring and kind of, you know, going into this, you know, next phase of life, I was really excited to see what he was going to become. I was really excited to see what direction his life was going to take. You know, him winning an Oscar was sort of crazy. But it really just spoke to just who he was and just how driven he is and how motivated he was to just dominate whatever he set his heart out for. And he was totally dedicated to dominate life. And that's the fact that it's taken away and that his daughter's life is taken away. It's devastating for me, especially being a father now. I have a young boy, and I want to see him grow up. And he doesn't know exactly what I was saying, but we've moved to Philadelphia just, you know, in the recent time. We just bought a house. You know, we live in the same community because we wanted my son to go to that high school because it's one of the best schools in the country. And I was sort of joked. I was like, hey, you know, he, I was talking about, I said, you know, when you wind up playing hoops, you know, maybe Kobe will come back and offer you some pointers and give you some tips, you know, when he comes back to Lower Merion. That day's not coming. Mm. And I have a hard time thinking that that day's not coming and that those, you know, his wife and his three remaining daughters won't have a father anymore. That's devastating for me. It's hard. This one really cut deep because Kobe was one of my favorite guys to cover. He was one of my favorite guys to cover.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel real, right? Like even still, even reading stuff and watching coverage all day and everything, like I was, you know, I didn't really pay attention to basketball Saturday night. Even with LeBron passing Kobe, like I knew it happened and everything. I saw the tweets and then I was like, oh, I'll watch the game on Sunday and catch that moment. And then, you know, it hits a group chat of a question of just, did Kobe die? And like, I'm immediately waiting for like a meme or a picture or a quote or something, right? Like just some kind of sarcasm, like about LeBron passing him. And I saw jokes last night of like, you know, Kobe's going to come out of retirement so that he can go past LeBron and everything. And you just like, you feed into the mentality. And then once you see the news about his daughter, like it's just, like, it, I don't know, it's not supposed to end like that. And I, you know, it's funny, you know, Michael talking about, you know, hating Kobe early and everything is, you know, I grew up a Timberwolves fan. And so when they drafted Kevin Garnett, I'm like, yeah, this kid out of high school, this is great. You know, I love this. And then the next year Kobe comes out and I see the same press conference and he says he's taking his talents to the NBA. He's got the glass on his head. And hypocritically, I was like, who does this guy think he is? Right? Like, I mean, that was my, I just remember that being my reaction. I'm like, you know, what I must have been, I was 14 when he declared for the draft. Like, I was, you know, just a dumb kid as opposed to a dumb adult now. But I remember thinking, like, oh, who does he, this kid thinks he's Kevin Garnett? Like, what, you know, how dare he and everything? And for a while, like, I didn't hate Kobe and I didn't like him. I was just kind of like, I was in awe and at the same time, a little offended at how brash he was. Just like the audacity to think you could mimic Michael and you could do all these things. And then I remember the night, like
the night he scored 81. And granted, that's deep into his career, right? Of like not really having a position on Kobe. But the night he scored 81, I was just like, okay, I get it. Like it all makes sense. Like not even the titles, right? Like the titles and any of that. It was the night he scored 81. I just remember thinking like, all right, like that all makes sense to me now.
Yeah.
Weren't you there, Marcus?
I was there, but I left.
You've got to be kidding.
No. You know, the Warriors played the early matinee game, right? And it was trash, whatever. And so, you know, they got blown out. I wrote my story. I was tired. And if I'm not mistaken, the Raptors were getting smashed or something like that. I was like,
no, the Raptors were smashing the Lakers.
No, he actually needed to score those 81 to win the game.
Every single one.
It was like a bad first half. I was like, all right, I'm out. This is done.
Wow.
And then when I got to my hotel room, and you know, you turn on the TV and it's on, and you're like, he was at like 60 or something. I'm like, should I go back? Should I go back? But I just could not. I couldn't pull myself away from the TV. Like, I wanted to see every bucket. So, but as a matter of fact, everybody who knows me, they believe that I was there. So hopefully they'll listen to this podcast because I'm like, yeah, I was at Staples the day.
Well, legally you were, right? Like that's not a lie.
I lied. I was literally in the building the same day.
You were there at one point during the day.
and Marcus, you remember? If you remember, I was in Oakland that week because I was doing a story on Monte Ellis, and I was able to, you know, I was going to spend a week in Oakland, and I was going to get the Cavs as they came through, the Lakers as they came through, and like a bunch of other teams. And I was going to do a story on Monte Ellis while I was out there. And I remember I drove up to Sacramento and I got Kobe Bryant one-on-one. We talked for like 10, 15 minutes. And he gave me this great stuff about how he got tired of the Jordan comparisons and how he wanted to have his own identity. And how he was sick of everybody always throwing MJ in his face, and how this whole generation just wants to move on and create their own identity. And like, it was just great stuff. And it was crazy because when I went up to Sacramento, I thought that everybody would be there, but I was the only writer there. Because I guess at that point, the LA, you know, beat writers had sort of made a pact that they wouldn't go to shoot arounds. So when I showed up, Kobe was still working out and he was the only guy there. And so he sat down and like, we just talked. And so I got this exclusive stuff with him and I was like, this is going to be a great story. This is great. And I remember calling my editor and I was saying, I got a great interview with Kobe. I said, but I think I want to go to LA, you know, to kind of go, cause the Warriors are playing. I was like, I can go check out, you know, get some more scene with Monte, and I can also check out Kobe and get some stuff with him. And my editor's like, go. And I was like, yeah, the ticket's cheap. And she was like, go. If you feel like, you know, you can get some stuff out there, go. I looked at the ticket. And I thought about it. I was like, you know what? Nobody else got Kobe for 10 minutes or whatever. I got the good stuff. There'll be nothing that tops what I got from him. And so I said, I'm going to write the story, you know, the Sunday night, turn it in, you know, have it in first thing in the morning, Monday, and everybody's going to be happy. And, you know, I'll have this great Kobe story and I'll have this, you know, great stuff. And so at like halftime, you know, I look at his scoring, I'm like, what? How many? He has how many points? And then third, I'm like, he has how many points? And then I'm just banging the desk and I'm cursing because I can't believe that I should have been there. And I said I wasn't gonna go. And then like the very next day, you know, I wrote my story and it wound up hitting A1 on the Washington Post. So I felt pretty good. I hit A1 on the Washington Post, which is pretty big deal. But nobody cared about my story. Everybody's talking about 81 points.
Well, you know a funny thing about that. So for his last game, so you know he's making his tour and everything. And I was working at CBS Sports at the time, and so like I'm in Salt Lake City for this game, his last game in Utah, and you know Andre Kirilenko comes and they have a nice moment. I get to witness, like, he goes over and you know, he had heard that that Jerry Sloan, you know, wasn't doing well, so he goes over and has like a moment with him to just say hello and everything. So it's really cool vibes, and I'm like, I gotta go to his last game, right? So I hit up my editor. I'm like, yo, I want to cover Kobe's last game in LA. He goes, yeah, no problem. And then for various reasons, the you know, leading up to that game, another writer there with, you know, seniority and more power pulls rank and says, no, like throws a fit, like, no, I want to be there. So I get moved to the Warriors 73. Right. They're playing Memphis. And so I'm like, wow, I'm going to catch the Warriors make history that night. He's going to score, you know, they're going to win 73 games. Like, oh my God. Like, I actually, you know, I get to watch history and everything. Like, I'm, you know, psyching myself up for it. And I'm tweeting through this game. And Marcus, I don't even know. I don't remember if you were there, Marcus, but it was a blowout.
I was there.
Okay. It was a blowout. And, you know, Warriors are rolling teams like they'd rolled them all season long. And like, I want to say, like, early in the third quarter, I'm tweeting something about the Warriors game. I just get all these replies like, no one cares. Kobe's going for 50. Kobe's going for 60. No one cares about this Warriors game. And I wrote some terrible game story, I'm sure. And then later I was like, man, of all the games to miss, that was the one where like I thought I was for sure going to go. And I was just sick the rest of the night. I was like, I cannot believe I missed this one because I didn't even get to watch it. Like, I had to watch it later. Like, I didn't even get to watch it live. I'm just seeing all the tweets about it.
You guys are jogging so many memories that come to mind. I remember the first time I asked anybody in the NBA about Kobe Bryant. I asked an assistant coach that I really respected, who had gone to scout him, because in those days you scouted high school. You went to high school games because high school players were in the draft, so they had to go. And the guy came back and said, I've watched him three times. He can't shoot. You know, his dribble's okay. Everybody thought he was, you know, he was going to go to Duke. That was kind of like the accepted thing at the time. Everybody kind of figured he had a relationship with Coach K already for whatever, however. And he wound up turning pro. And so I go on, I was at ESPN at the time, and I go on national television, and I had this, like, back in those days, you had these notes columns that you did every week on TV. And so basically I go on TV and I repeat exactly what the assistant coach told me. He can't shoot. He doesn't have a handle. And at the end I said, Kobe, you should have gone to college. So he waits as he was wont to do. So I'm in LA at, like, 6 years later. And I'm covering something. I don't know what I'm covering. I'm covering something. And he scores like 47 or something, and the Lakers win easily. And so I go in the locker room afterwards, and we're talking. And, you know, he's with the scrum, and everybody's talking. And at the end of the scrum, when everybody's done, he turns to me and he goes, should have gone to college, huh? He waited 6 years to do that, to say that to me. It's phenomenal.
You know, that makes me think too about Kobe. Could get the little jab in. He could get a real sly jab in. Because I remember the interview I did right this MVP season, and I had really fought. I thought he should have got the MVP in 2006 because I thought him averaging 35 was just an incredible accomplishment. And I made this real strong case about why he should have got it. He didn't get it. And I was saying that Steve Nash got, you know, he got it, but he had a lot more help than Kobe did. Mm-hmm. And so that year, when I asked the first question I asked Kobe, I said, isn't it funny how you're a much better player now that you have Pau Gasol? Mm-hmm.
Right.
and he's like, yeah, that's right. He said, people don't realize, you know, I was playing with Kwame Brown, Smush Parker. And like, he was just naming off all the bums on his team. And I was just like, yeah, yeah. I was like, and it's just like, he knew how to just, he got the little digs in right when he needed to.
Believe me, and this is the part that I want to make sure we chat about, is that, you know, Kobe was not all fuzzy, warm roses and chocolates. Oh,
no.
Okay.
No, no.
I can personally attest to that over many encounters over the years. I was there I covered that Phoenix series when he took three shots in the second half of game 7. And I'm sitting next to the PR director of the Lakers at the time going, what's he doing? And John Black just threw his hands up. I don't know. Just to prove a point, because people thought he was selfish. I was just telling somebody the other day, I was recounting the story of the 2004 finals when they were going for the four-peat and they played the Pistons. And we were doing a pregame shot on the floor of Staples Center. And I remember to this day, the Pistons coming in. And we were wrapping up, and Larry Brown, who I had gotten to know from his Philly days, said, where are you going? What are you doing? And I said, well, we're leaving. he said, well, why are you leaving? And I said, because you're about to start practice. He said, and I don't want to be, you know, coarse. And he said, I don't give a shit if you watch practice, watch practice. And I remember at the end of the practice, he gathered the whole team around him and he said, guys, Kobe and Shaq hate each other. They will not pass each other the ball. I promise you we're going to beat them. Just like that. Wow. As if he had said, it's 71 degrees outside. I remember filing that because I thought they're going to get beaten five, right? So, I mean, I thought, okay, they're not gonna, but just in case they somehow win this in seven, you know, I'll remember that. Of course, they wound up winning in five because in game four, when they were down 2-1 and Shaq scored like 19 in the first quarter and was on his way to 60, Kobe decided – yeah, he's shot enough for tonight.
Yeah, he's good.
He just started jacking shots.
I'm double teamed the whole game. Don't matter. Hey, Sean and Rip. Okay, I can bust both of y'all.
It's unbelievable. He just started jacking shots. And everybody's just looking at each other like, what is he doing? Shaq's like 11 for 12 in the first quarter. You know?
That was a fun series, too. You think about that one game that they won, game two. When he hit that three to tie to send it to overtime, I've never heard more writers curse at the same time than then at that moment. We were all ready to fight, especially East Coast writers. You know, game one, game two in LA, we're just ready to hit send and, you know, Pistons go up 2-0. You know, they manhandled the Lakers. Like, I'm done. I'm just sitting here just waiting for the last couple seconds to tick off. He hits that three. I'm telling you, everybody around me was cursing up a storm, slamming, just going crazy. Mm-hmm. But pandemonium throughout Staples because, you know, the fans were going berserk. Sure. And I remember at that moment, I was like, man, I hope the Pistons sweep them in Detroit just for this. I don't want to come back here.
Right.
And wouldn't you know it?
That reminds me of it was that Phoenix series where Rajah Bell clotheslines him, right?
Yeah, it was and the I same remember, series, yeah.
Yeah, I remember at the time, yeah. Like fearing for the Suns, just fearing for them. Like the next game, it was just like that was the lore, right? Of just, oh man, he pissed off Kobe. Now what's going to happen? And it was like, it was pure anticipation. Like as soon as that moment happened, I just remember me and my friends just going, oh my God, he's going to score 70 points. He's going to score 60 points. Like he's going to destroy them the next game because you believe that he was that maniacal.
Yeah.
I first heard about Kobe when I was in college. It was this dude from Philly who had a newspaper article on his dorm room wall of Kobe with a Lower Marion Union talking about this guy gonna be next. He's gonna be the next star. And I was like, yeah, whatever. Like most people, I really became a fan of Kobe when he went to the prime with Brandy.
Mm-hmm,
and I was like, oh, this dude legit right here. I was like, I like this dude, right? He went snatched up Brandy and went to the prom. And Brandy was hot back then. You know, I want to be down was everywhere. So I was like, this dude is straight in high school and got Brandy going to the prom with him. Like, all right. And, you know, Kobe was a little bit corny to me, but he was so gangster.
Oh, no, like, his rap career alone, Marcus. His rap career. Like, oh, my goodness.
Just, like, Kobe don't like just the audacity that he had, right?
Yeah.
The insufferable, like relentlessness, like you, everybody wished they had that element so you can identify with that. Like Kobe was the gangster everybody wanted to be.
Right.
He just didn't. Like for me, he's a real version of what Russell Westbrook want, like embodies, right? People like who Russell Westbrook is and how he like puts on that. Against all odds, like Kobe,
he believed it. Yeah.
Off the court, like it was a preseason game years ago, like 2009, and Steven Jackson, who had wanted out, right? He was trying to get traded. He had just signed his max extension, even though he had 2 years left, and he was ready to go. So we were like in the Honda Center or something in Anaheim or Ontario or something like that, and he gets into it with Kobe in the first quarter. He like fouls out in the first quarter. Like, because Kobe elbowed him. Steven Jackson got mad. They start going at it. So Steven Jackson pops off after the game. Like, this is a preseason game, yo.
Right.
Steven Jackson pops off after the game. And Kobe, he talks about it. But I had got what Steven Jackson said. So I was like, I'm going to go take it to Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, uh-oh, Kobe, we got to talk. And he's like, what they say, man. And so I basically read him the quote that Steven Jackson said. Mm-hmm. And he's like, man, tell Steven Jackson he's my guy. And then Lord, no. He was so like, oh, that's cute. They mad. Like, you tell him I like it. I was like, dang, you sure you want to play him like that? Like, mm-hmm. that's how you want to pat him on top of the head and say that's right. Cute.
That's sure. The rudest trash talk you can
he's,
do.
Yeah, he's There's not no he's not worthy right? of good of my trash
oh,
talk.
Oh my god.
That's cute. Like, that's
yeah,
cute.
I'm gonna give you a compliment right now.
You know, you spoke about Kobe's audacity, and you know, I'm sad now I won't ever be able to ask him. But I remember one of his former teammates was telling me about how motivated Kobe was, just how crazy he was about working out and just how determined he was. And how, you know, he retired with 5 rings.
Yeah.
But I had a teammate tell me that Kobe's goal was to retire with 8 rings.
Mm.
He wanted to top Jordan.
Yeah, of course. Sure.
And not just get 7. He wanted right. 8. He wanted to retire with 8 rings. And I've always wanted to ask him if that was true.
Oh, I have no doubt that's true. I have zero doubt that that's true.
And so... I got it from a guy who I trust, you know, telling me that. He told me that, you know, about 10 years ago, like when he was still, you know, playing in his peak and MVP status. And I was like, really? He's like, you know, he wants 8, man. Like, he don't want 7. He wants mm-hmm. 8. He wants to be better than Mike.
Yeah. It's so ironic that you would, you know, that he would take the public persona of, you know, feigning dismay that people compared him to Kobe or to Michael when that's all he was when he came into the league. Yeah. he was doing a Michael impersonation, like, literally.
It was like literally a cover band of basketball. Yeah. Right? I mean, the way he walked and chewed, like everything was right. Mike. Remember how hard he went in that All-Star game?
Exactly. Oh, my Mike. God. Like, when he waved like off Karl Malone?
Moment of his life.
In the garden. In Madison Square Garden, he's waving off Karl Malone. I remember the look on Karl Malone's face because I was sitting courtside. I remember the look on his face. He was literally like, what the fuck am I doing in this game? When can I get off this floor and go back home? Because this is stupid. You know?
I mean, how nuts do you have to be to really be like, man, I'm going at Mike in an All-Star game? Like, you got to be. I mean, that's how nuts Kobe was. But I will say this, and I think this is important and something like we should be highlighting in days to come. Like, especially when we're talking about NBA ratings and about growing the game.
Yeah.
Kobe was the OG who loved the current players.
Yeah.
Like he wasn't out here ripping dude. Like right. You could tell he enjoyed them. And you know, obviously he enjoyed that so many of them looked up to him. Mm-hmm. I remember how happy they were. Remember the last All-Star game, how just happy they were.
Oh, my God.
It was unbelievable, right? It was like Steph Curry is like just giggly that he's next to Kobe in the All-Star game locker room in his last game. It was like I'm sure he loved that position, but he respected the game so much that after he retired, he still big up the game. It wasn't he wasn't one of these, oh, in my day. I mean, everybody kind of knew, like, in his day, but he's like, yeah, like, these youngsters are good, man. I like them in a way that I think is good for the game.
You're right.
Allen Iverson last night, and he's another one.
Iverson, absolutely another one, yep.
Yeah, and he was talking about LeBron, and, you know, I was there when LeBron passed Kobe, and just to hear the reverence with which LeBron speaks of Kobe, and, you know, he talked about, you know, their relationship and just how – you know, the 2002 All-Star weekend, you know, LeBron wound up playing in New Jersey, you know, Oak Hill Academy. Mm-hmm. And he drove down to Philly to meet up with Kobe. And Kobe gave him some rare white and blue Adidas. And LeBron wound up playing in them, you know, that night. And it meant everything to him at that point that Kobe would even, you know, think about a high school kid. And, they had this sort of never really rivalry because they didn't meet, you know, in the finals, but there was always something there about who was the best player in the game. And it was fun to watch. I wish that, you know, we would have had at least either in 2009 or 10 that we could have seen those guys go head to head. But, You know, it's funny too, when we talked about Kobe and Mike, one thing that stands out to me too was the 03 All-Star game, Mike's last All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
He hits that pull-up jumper over Sean Marion,
right,
and everyone's ready to say Mike, you know, wins the All-Star
exactly.
game.
Exactly.
And Kobe start hating. Yeah.
He ruined it.
Mike, I was all ready for the walk-off interview too. Mike's last All-Star game.
Kobe like, yeah, Mike, thanks for the shot and all, but I'm about to ruin your day.
I know. You're talking about people being mad. It was like the storybook ending, you know?
It was perfect. It was perfect. And Kobe like, yeah, nah, I'm cool.
Well, you talked about the reverence that he has, you know, for the players. And I remember like seeing him, it was either 2006 or 2007 during the playoffs. He joined Inside the NBA on TNT,
mm-hmm.
and it was a Spurs game. And they were at halftime of the game, and he's just like marveling at Manu Ginobili, like mm-hmm. he's like, no, look at his footwork here, look how he does like steps here, and like he's just going like, I would love to get video of that, because it's just like the appreciation he had for anybody who was just doing basketball a certain way, right? Like he yeah. like obviously his craft and working on that was arguably unmatched in the history of the game, but like just his appreciation for the way guys found advantages and everything. Like I just remember watching that of him just geeking out, just doing what, you know, what I do, what, you know, NBA Twitter is all this stuff, like just geeking out over a guy who was really good at basketball and appreciating that. I just like, to me, that just spoke volumes for how much he loved the game.
Yeah. And he was the type of dude who would literally try to cut your head off. And mm-hmm. if you survive, he respected you for surviving. Yes. Like,
yeah.
it's like, yeah, I'm going to try to, I will try to embarrass your family name. But if somehow you're still standing afterwards, you my dog. Yeah. I remember Steph was young and everybody was like, ah, oh, he can't play point guard. So Kobe picks up Steph like from half court, and he's, you know, when Kobe wanted to defend, especially mm-hmm. when he was at his peak, he would lock you down
yep.
and he was all over. So Steph could barely dribble. So of course, being Steph Curry, he stops dribbling, cuts all that out, and pulls up a 35 footer and hits it right in Kobe's face. Opie pats him on the butt on the way back down. Like, hey man, hey, good shot, Playboy, because I was on you. And like, you know, you hardly see that anymore. There was like a certain old school Rivers.
Oh,
like,
yeah. No, he respected
for you.
He respected, yeah, he that. Respected no, these, no question. He respected
he,
people putting the work. No
he
question.
Inspired many guys that are in the league now. I mean, you talk to, you know, you name it, Paul George, DeMar DeRozan, mm-hmm. Isaiah Thomas, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kyrie Irving. These are guys that he's like taking a mentorship role in their lives and their careers. And these are guys that I remember, you know, I did a story about it, just how he's sort of the godfather now for these guys, and how this is a role that he never thought he would have,
yeah.
You know, in his life, because he was so just, you know, driven and just focused, laser focused on one thing, being the best, being the best, being the best. And that's all that drove him to the point where it he didn't have the friend, you know, he didn't have those kind of relationships because he was so single-minded.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think toward the end, in that last year when he had a chance to reflect, and then now in his retirement, you know, he realized that, you know, as much as he just wanted to be the greatest, the true impact that he's had is what you're feeling right now. You can see the impact that he had on lives and how he motivated guys and made them want to be better and, you know, inspired them, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of people probably miss. And he even missed it. He didn't get a chance to really understand it until now. And when his career is over, that, you know, it wasn't just chasing Mike. It wasn't just getting those rings. Those are great. But it's the lasting impact on players. It's what you see in the way guys are honoring them, you know, in the games. You know, it's what's going to happen probably for the rest of this year and for a long time coming.
Yeah.
Because the influence that you have, the people that you can touch, and the people in the ways you can touch them, that's really what it's about, you know. And just in you know, he aspired to be great, and he reached it. But the real greatness is just, you know, all the stardust that he left behind.
Yeah, I know. There's, you know, I'm older than all of you, so I approach these things a little bit differently. You know, the idea that anybody would even dare to, compare themselves in any way, directly or indirectly, to Michael Jordan just seems – it's laughable to me, right? Yeah. I mean, there's – you know, it's just laughable. But I get it because I understand, that, like you mentioned, Mike, for all so many of these players of this era, he was Michael for them. He was their Michael. And I get that. I understand that. And I appreciate
for
that.
For real. Facts.
Yeah.
And David, don't you think, like, to become as great as Kobe Bryant was, you have to have this insane mindset that, yeah, I could be better than Michael Jordan.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, absolutely. I mean, you're right. Like, it sounds absurd. Like, yeah. It sounds absolutely absurd. Like, you know, we mentioned the audacity and everything, but, like, it's, you know, a lot of guys can say, oh, yeah, I want to be as good as this. Like, he was the one guy that seemed to really try to embody that, right? Yeah. Like, in not just do it like, you know, LeBron's done it in a very different way, right? LeBron's tried to chase these ghosts in a very different way, but Kobe was just like, no, I'm going to be him and I'm going to be a better version. And he didn't end up doing it, but like that was his method of doing it. Not I'm going to find my own way. So he's like, no, I'm going to do it his way. And I'm just going to try to be better at it, which is crazy. But that was him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that for me, like, you know, personally, that audacity extended into the way he was like, yeah, it's me and my daughter and she's going as far as hoop takes us. Yeah. Like, and there, you know, the quote on I forgot what it was, maybe Conan, where he's like, where Gigi is saying,
I think it was Jimmy,
you don't
Kimmel.
Need a son. Kimmel, yeah, you don't need it. You don't need a boy to do that. I got you. And he was all in on it. And that's that's the part that touches me, like to see this player. And you know, it's very normal. I don't want to act like he's like special for raising his child, but all of our relationships in pro sports, at least the glorified ones, are father and son.
Yeah.
Like it's father and son. It's father and son. It's LeBron at Bronny's game, right? It's playing Michael Thomas. Like he's out here like taking his daughter everywhere on a court, on a front row, right? And I wouldn't be surprised if he's like, yeah, you're going to make the NBA, you know?
Right.
Like that audacity continued. It wasn't like it was just like it was so in him that he's like, all right, now I'm going to give it to you. And it's just such a great example to just watch a father be a father to his daughter on that level. It really is inspiring. Like I got my daughter a pair of Kobe's to play volleyball just because of that. Like she's playing volleyball. That's why I'm trying to hold it. I'm like, I'm at the volleyball game, right? And I'm hitting it. It's hit me and I'm getting all these texts. And this is her first tournament, y'all. So I'm really trying not to like sour this whole thing, right? So I'm like keeping it together. Yeah. I got to step out, come in, and I'm like, oh, I'm looking, and then I look down at her feet. She got on Kobe's, and I'm like, what are you doing to me?
Right.
Like, chill, trying to watch it. So I didn't even tell her afterwards, and I was like, yeah, you just gonna ride. They went and got ice cream. And then afterwards in the car, we drive home. She's like, oh, yeah, did you hear about Kobe Bryant? I'm like, well, I guess I don't have to. I guess I don't have to. Yeah, no. Right. But that was big for me. Like for me, as I'm raising my daughter, like it matters to watch. Like everything when you have a daughter, especially like everything, like you start seeing stuff. And for me, that's the correlation you make. I'm sure when you have a son, I don't have a son, but when you have one, I'm sure you're looking at little boys and all that. So just watching that for me is inspiring. And I'm glad he was a gangster enough to do it. Yeah, but this is my daughter. She about to be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And not back away from it, you know, and give her that, you know, that Mamba mentality that he talked a lot about, you know, it was kind of like his thing. Right. So,
yeah,
it's still so surreal. I can't even, you know, I can't even put my arms around this. I mean, I just don't, it's difficult for me to even think about him, you know, in the past tense, you know, and it's been a tough week in that regard. You know, I was at David Stern's his memorial service, I should say, on Tuesday in New York. And that was very emotional, seeing so many people that I hadn't seen in years, and just thinking about the, you know, there was 3,000-4,000 people there. And I mean, it was the whole lower bowl of Radio City Music Hall. And if you've ever been in Radio City Music Hall, you know, it seats about 6,000 people. Well, the whole lower bowl was full. And I was sitting there listening to the people give their speeches and just thinking, you know, everybody in this room had his or her life fundamentally changed, not exclusively, but in large part because of one man, because of David Stern, you know, and his ability to take these great players and put them on a platform that went around the world. That was not there before he got there. So I was thinking, you know, you think about that and you just, and it makes you sad, you know, because it feels like an era is passing. Then on Wednesday, the legendary coach at my high school, DeMatha High School, Morgan Wooten, passed away at 83, who had, you know, was basically the reason why DeMatha is known around the world, is because of its basketball team. And he was the coach for that whole time, up until when he retired a few years ago. And that's been personally just just difficult for me. I didn't play for him, but I've told everybody I felt like he was my coach too, even though I didn't play for him, because he just gave you so much pride in being an alumnus of the school because of the way he carried himself, because of the way the team carried himself. And now you have this, and I just don't know what to do. I don't know what to do about how to kind of compartmentalize all of this, these feelings that are going through me. It's hard to kind of understand how to react to it. Because he was so young. I was always older than him, you know, and I never thought of him as a son. I certainly didn't think of him that way, but I thought of him as my, you know, kind of like my knucklehead nephew, you know what I mean? Like, you know, who was really, really blessed with incredible talent, and you came to respect it. And I certainly came to respect him. I remember Gary Vitti, who was the trainer for the Lakers forever, you know, he was telling the story. I'm sure he told you guys the story as well over the years, that when Kobe tore his Achilles against the Warriors, and he's lying there on the floor with a torn Achilles, and he says, "You think we could tape it up?" And Gary goes, "Do you see your Achilles is rolled up to your knee? No, we can't tape it up. You can't play anymore." You know,
he shot the free throws.
And he shot the free throws, right.
Yeah. I have a funny story about that, too, because he had he separated his shoulder in New Orleans. You know, his season ended the next season, I think, or 2 years season after that, it ended with a separated shoulder in New Orleans. And I was there to try to get an interview with him, because he said I could talk to him about something. And he separated his shoulder in the game. And I was like, oh, my gosh, there's no way he's going to want to do this interview after separating his shoulder. Like, no. Oh, man, it's probably over. Kobe showed up out of the shower, right, fully dressed, with a backpack on. And we were like, how in the heck did he get a backpack on with a separated shoulder, right? And he just wound up talking like, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, I'm okay. Yeah, it shouldn't keep me out very long. I'll be back. And everybody's looking at each other like, we just saw you grab your arm and not be able to lift it. Like, how are you okay? But we all believed that he was okay. And then he wound up giving me like 5-6 minutes afterward to talk about something else. And I'm thinking he's okay. The next day, like, Kobe Bryant done for the year. And I'm like, how did this dude pull this off? Like, he was determined to look like a man of steel. And that's why his death is so shocking, because Kobe doesn't die because Kobe was unbreakable. He was indestructible. Like, he was this machine that you couldn't break down. Yeah. And who refused to be defeated in any way. And it's just sad.
And I think too, obviously, his age, his daughter being in the wreck, you know, other families being involved in everything. It's just like, loss always brings about confusion, you know, like, it's always, why did this happen? How did this happen? What could have prevented it? Like, it's just, all it ever brings is more questions. Yeah. And because it's not just him, right? Because it's his daughter and it's other families involved and the pilot and everything. Like, it's, like that, it feels like such an overwhelming confusion. And I don't know when that goes away, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it does. And it won't for a while, because, you know, you know, these are substantive people we're talking about, you know, whether it's David Stern or Kobe Bryant. These are people who had tremendous impact on the culture of sports and specifically the league that we all cover, right? I mean, I was looking at my phone because, you know, among the many people that are talking to us today at The Athletic, you know, somebody said, well, does anybody have any pictures of Kobe Bryant? And I was amazed how many pictures I had of Kobe Bryant in my phone. I was stunned. I couldn't believe it. No, like, again, I live in D.C. I'm not in L.A. every day. I don't cover them every day. And I just looked at my phone. I was like, wow, I've got a lot of pictures of Kobe in here, you know, because I was at his retirement. I was at his jersey retirement. I was at the last game. I was at the last All-Star game in Toronto. And so it's just you just think about all the encounters you had with this one person because of their unique skill and their unique ability to display that skill at the absolute highest level that you can. And it's just like you said, I just can't fathom that light has been extinguished. It just doesn't seem like that's even possible.
I can't deal with the daughter, man. Like, I can't. That really. I've been asking. I asked a friend, like, why does she have to be? You know, why? I know Kobe would give everything ever to keep her off of that flight. And I'm like, just why? And that's the part that really is just killing me. Mm. And one of my friends texted me and said, you know, like, maybe they were so close that neither could imagine life without the other, you know? Yeah. And I thought that was a pretty comforting thought because it's just unfathomable.
Yeah. Well, it's cruel. It's cruel.
Yes.
It's cruel that because of his success and his largesse, he could afford to take a helicopter to a basketball game instead of being on a 405 with everybody else, you know, complaining about the traffic on a Sunday afternoon, you know. And that just seems cruel, right? I mean, it just seems like that's so unfair, you know. So I don't, you know, it's we probably should just stop here. You know, I think we, you know, I will definitely yield the floor to everybody if they have some final thoughts. But I just feel like, you know, maybe the best thing for everyone to do in the hours and days to come is to just kind of try and contemplate, you know, life and contemplate the preciousness of it. I know because of these recent losses and other losses, it's been a lot of death around lately. And I'm trying very hard to tell people that I care about them. And I think maybe we all should try and do that. But y'all go, you know, close it out with whatever you want to say or whatever is left in your heart about what we're all trying to deal with.
For me, just my thoughts are with, you know, his daughters, his wife, his family, the families that were also involved in this. And I'm with you, Dave. Just tell the people that you love them.
I mean, I my heart is just like rendered for Vanessa and. I mean, and just that family, like, I can't even imagine. I've lost my father. I've lost my sister. Yeah. You know, I've watched my best friend's son die way too young. Like, death, where I'm from and how I was raised, is just a part of life. Mm-hmm. It's a normal thing. So the part that I want to leave with is I'm just thankful that Kobe was a father. And I just encourage people to be present parents, right? Mm-hmm. To just to leave a legacy where your children know who you are and they can value you. David, you gave up a whole lot of money.
Yeah, yeah I did.
You know what I'm saying? Because you got to be home. And, right. And I know black fathers have gotten a bad rap, but that dude was a dad, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you guys said it best. I don't know what else to add other than just try to inspire somebody, you know, right. Even if you can't inspire the world, just the person next to you, the person in your house, be the best that you can be and hope that you can be that light for somebody. Because, you know, we all feel that pain today because, you know, even though we may not know Kobe, he touched us in some way. He mm-hmm. affected us in some way. We all have that opportunity to affect anybody's life. We all have the opportunity to touch somebody and just try to be that light for somebody because you can always inspire.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to end, Michael. And thank you. And thank you, Marcus. And thank you, Zach, for joining short notice on a day where I think all of us would rather be with our thoughts and with our families. But, you know, we want to let the world know that what this man meant to so many of us and what he meant to the world and that we acknowledge that and we acknowledge the gift and we thank him for it and we send our deepest condolences to his family and to his many friends and all the people that really did love him as a player. He was by far the most beloved Laker that I've ever seen personally, you know, since Magic, and maybe more beloved than Magic even. I don't know, but we'll leave it there. And God bless y'all. Have a good evening.
You're worried about your own team. You're coaching your daughter's team.
I am. They're doing well, though. I mean, they've been playing for like a year and a half.
What's their record?
They don't have seasons. It's crazy. They just have tournaments like every weekend.
I see. And if they don't win the tournaments, do they have to sleep in the yard or anything like that? Or
no food for a week.
Yeah, because if anyone would think like that, yeah. I would think it would be the mom of their talent.
With half a minute to play, Bryant for the lead.
Daughters, Natalia, Gianna, and Bianca. You know, you guys know that, you know, if you do the work, you work hard enough, dreams come true. But hopefully what you get from tonight is the understanding that those times when you get up early and you work hard, those times when you stay up late and you work hard, those times when you don't feel like working, you're too tired, you don't want to push yourself, but you do it anyway. That is actually the dream. That's the dream. It's not the destination, it's the journey. If you guys can understand that, then what you'll see happen is that you won't accomplish your dreams. Your dreams won't come true. Something greater will. And if you guys can understand that, then I'm doing my job as a father. Thank you guys so much. I love you. And, Mamba out.